This is Kyle Easton with Black Belt Performance. We're continuing the series Black Belt Business Skills, where we're talking to experts in their respective areas so you can learn from them to take your business or your personal life to that black belt level. Today I'm speaking with our guest expert, John Storm. John is known as the Brainstorm Expert and is the founder and the rainmaker of the Brainstorm Network. He says his mission is to bring your ideas to life. John invested 14 years of his career in the sporting goods industry, where he was the director of marketing for Storm Lures, which is an international fishing lure company. That sounds like a fun business.
It was pretty good.
Fishing business. But he personally, in that role, called on Walmart headquarters, worked with Kmart, Bass Pro Shops, and in fact managed the global marketing efforts of that family business. Interestingly, John's also been a window washer, restaurant manager, shipping clerk, door-to-door salesman, as well as a janitor and a minister. In fact, John told me there's not that much difference between being a janitor and a minister.
Not much.
Just depends on your perspective. I saw, John, on your website, too, there's some interesting facts that kind of caught my eye, and I think they're meant to be kind of fun, but says you were bitten by country music star Conway Twitty's dog.
Yes, that was one of my early memories. Watching out, it was actually a Halloween memory. A friend of mine and I went over to the rich side of town and where Conway Twitty lived and knocked on his door, and his daughter opened the door and their dog comes sailing right out. I tacked my leg, and that kind of taught me that I should not dress up as a bum anymore.
Maybe you shouldn't go there and trick or treat in July.
I don't know. It was in October.
Okay. Yeah. And you got chased by bandits on your honeymoon to Jamaica.
Yes, that was a good way to start a marriage. That's a little bit longer story, but ultimately we were chased down a River Falls area by people that were after us for some reason, and so we escaped by the skin of our chinny chin chin.
So quite an adventure on your honeymoon.
We definitely lost some weight running down the mountain with bandits chasing us, yes.
And there's several others, but another one that caught my eye, you lived in a funeral home in Washington, D.C.
Yes. After my freshman year in college, I met a guy that was involved in the politics. He's working on a PhD in political science, and anyway, he ended up getting a job out there and asked if I wanted to go, and so I got a couple of internships out there, and for some strange reason, we found some really cheap housing in the upstairs portion of a funeral home, and it was pretty good. The only challenge was those first 45 minutes when you get home, the formaldehyde just kind of eats your nasal passage, so... Yeah, that was kind of a crazy summer.
But at least it was quiet.
It was very quiet, but it was a little frightening.
That's a little unnerving. Right, so just, you know, a few examples. John brings a little bit of life experience to his service to his clients. John certainly works as a professional speaker, a consultant, trainer, facilitator, and actually wrote the book on brainstorming. That's actually the title of the book, right? The Book on Brainstorming. Great book. I've seen it and used it. And also has an amazing new website called cyberstorming.com. Cyberstorming.com, a brainstorm tool online.
Yes,
so I certainly want to talk about that. But welcome, John. It's great to have you.
Kyle, it's always good to hang out with you. Thank you. Looking forward to it today.
Now, how does a person get into the idea business?
Well, the reality of it is I think that every one of us are in the idea business, because everything that we do, it's generated by the ideas that are sparking in our brains. I was really fortunate in that I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My dad and uncle started a business back in 1964, and that really kind of created a hunger or an appetite for ideas. My favorite story about that is that every night when my dad would come home for supper, we'd sit down and he'd always go, are you ready for the million-dollar idea? And we'd immediately start laughing because most of his ideas were extremely bizarre.
There you go.
There you go.
Hopefully this time.
But then we would be dying laughing, and inevitably he would have some fantastic ideas, some of which he actually implemented, some of which we saw other people come up with the idea too, not steal his, but it's just great ideas. Like one of his great ideas was to have a credit card for a gas pump so that you could pump it up
gas.
Really? And that obviously wasn't anything that he then invented. And someone else came up with the idea as well. And that was one we're going, Dad, that was one you should have done.
Yeah, but yeah, commonplace now.
Anyway, so pretty much I went in college. I graduated with a degree in communication, and so that's certainly the world of ideas. And then ended up working for a variety of different strange businesses and careers, and but spent the bulk of my career in 14 years with Storm Looters. And so that was fantastic because any manufacturer of product has to deal with all levels of idea, from generating the product in the front end, to market research, to packaging, to how you're going to source it, how you're going to do personnel problems, sales, marketing, distribution, collections, customer service, all those things. And so it was just a fertile ground for learning how to think.
Absolutely. Great training ground. And so now you've evolved from that to, we mentioned you're the rainmaker for the Brainstorm Network. What's a rainmaker?
Well, rainmaker was popularized, I guess, as a term by Jeffrey Fox, who wrote a book called How to Become a Rainmaker. But obviously, with the last name being Storm and my expertise being in brainstorming, then I'm always playing around with different kinds of themes. And so the metaphor that I use is trying to think of atmospheres of innovation. So what are the atmospheric themes that might go along with brainstorming? And so really, in my ultimate metaphor, rain is the ideas that come down all the time that nourish a dry and drought-laden world. And
sure.
So if I can help you become a rainmaker, I help create rain and hopefully nourish a lot of people and companies with the ideas that they generate.
Okay,
along the way.
Sure. Well, tell us about some of those companies. I know you've worked with some big names. Tell us a little bit about some of your clients.
Well, I really have been blessed because I've gotten to work with some of the biggest companies, BASF, which is the world's largest chemical company,
right.
Baxter Healthcare, they've got just a gob of people. Siemens, they're around the world. I just finished up a job with Lyondell Chemicals. They've got about 10,000 employees.
Right.
And then Encana Oil and Gas, which is a huge oil and gas producer based out of Canada. Freddie Mac, who's done one out of every six homes in the United States as far as mortgages. And then Explorer Pipeline, who runs a pipeline from the Gulf Coast all the way to Chicago. And then one of my newer clients is Valspar, which produces all different kinds of industrial coating. So these are some of the bigger names, and yet I've really been blessed with a lot of smaller companies with just great people, too. So
right.
Unfortunately, I can't really discuss really hardcore details of the work that I do with them, but they usually fall into one of three categories as far as how I help people. One, that they have a big challenge going on in the organization where they need a bunch of ideas, really more profitable ideas fast. And when I say more profitable, I mean it in two ways. Oftentimes people need more profitable ideas, meaning a greater quantity of ideas, and then more profitable ideas as far as ideas that create more bang for the buck or more impact. The second category is when people are really stuck in a rut. Because sometimes we all find ourselves, whether it's personally or professionally, just stuck. We've been doing this forever and
right.
We're just kind of lost. And so I come in and try to act as a catalyst to really help them to think differently. The third option, which is just something that I've seen happen in the last year or so, is where people are hiring me to come in and really sharpen their tools, to train their teams how to brainstorm better so that I don't have to keep coming back. Basically, I'm able to train their team to be able to be catalysts within their own organization. So I guess the big thing is that most companies say that they're innovative, but if they really get gut level honest, they're really not that innovative. And you may ask, how do I know that? Well, two primary reasons. One, hotjobs.com did a survey recently that asked how many managers want employees who think outside the box. Whenever I ask this in speeches that I'm doing, we always get the range from the super optimist who say 90% to the super pessimist who might say 10%. Well, the reality is even worse. Only 7% of managers in this survey said that they wanted employees who think outside the box.
Really? 7%?
Yes, and that is so, I mean, how can you say that you're an innovative organization when your managers don't even really care about the ideas of their employees who have great ideas that they want
right.
to share.
Yeah, we hear that all the time going, oh, we need to think outside the box on this one. But you're saying that the vast majority, really, the majority of managers really don't want that? Is that threatening? Is it,
you know,
we don't want to deal with change, or?
In workshops and seminars, we usually engage in a 10-15 minute discussion about why we think that's the case. And certainly, some of it may be a threat on the part of the manager, but I tend to think it's really more functional in the sense of managers are busy, they just want people to do their jobs, not keep coming up with more ideas. But that stifles an atmosphere of innovation, which gets people to be thinking. You know, part of it is a misconception that all ideas have to be good. You know, most of our ideas are not amazing ideas. I mean, some of them are little improvements, some of them are stupid, and we still want to share them. But, you know, you want to live in a culture in which people are free to share those and let the great ones come to the top. But the other reason I think that most are struggling is because I usually do a survey before I go into a company and I ask, how many brainstorming techniques do you know?
Right.
And at least 50% of every company, no matter how big or innovative they are, come back and say they only know one or zero technique.
Wow.
Now, how can you be innovative when they only know one
technique? One way to do something, yeah.
Well, that one technique is usually what I call 1950s brainstorming. And just a quick history lesson, Alex Osborne actually coined the term brainstorming back in the 1950s. He was a pioneer in the field, just a giant. But he set up what we call modern brainstorming rules, where you sit around the table and you yell ideas, you can't criticize, you write them as best you can.
Right.
That has worked reasonably well for about 50 years. But modern research has been showing that that is not the best and most effective way to harvest the ideas of your team.
Hmm.
And so what we have is all these companies that spend billions of dollars in all the different kinds of innovative strategies, but they're stuck in 1950s brainstorming if they only know one technique. So anyway, over the last couple of years, I've been fortunate with not only being able to work with some fantastic people, some of whom you know, also studying hard in this field, and then trying to codify how I generate ideas, really come up with about 25 to 30 different techniques.
Oh, really?
That is what happens when I hear people say one technique, and I go, oh! Well, I invented one little tool that I call the Pocket Innovation Tool. It's just one sheet that you fold up, and it has seven different techniques on it. So I almost always give those away and say, here, if you just know one, now you can know seven times just by looking at the sheet. So anyway, I've been blessed to work with some great people.
Wow, fascinating. So I'm hoping we get into some of those techniques here in just a few minutes and at least get an introduction to that. So you work as, you may be a hired gun, if you will, to come in and, well, let's have John come in and generate some ideas because we're stuck. Or you may facilitate their group or come in and train their people to use some of these tools.
Yeah, usually it turns into the latter two. When I first started my business, I thought that people would hire me more to come in and just generate ideas for them. And although I still do some of that, what I found was that the more valuable piece was to teach them how to do what I do. So, I mean, yes, I still do some consulting, but I'm not brilliant in every area. I know that shocks you, but
I would argue with that because I work with John.
No, I mean, I'm not an expertise like the Lionel Chemical that I worked with this last week. I don't know that much about chemicals, but what I do know is how to get their super smart people to get the ideas out of their head. And although sometimes I offer my advice, it's more of an exploratory way. I don't claim to be an expert in the chemical industry, but certainly after working and coming with an outside perspective, I can see some things, and working with a lot of different companies, sometimes I'll give them some ideas of things for them to consider too.
Right.
Most of the time it's just trying to facilitate and get the ideas out of their heads.
Okay. So we may not be a chemical expert or engineering expert, but certainly an expert in the process that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So today we talked about being black belts, and from when you and I have talked before, I know you have some martial arts experience.
Very minimal.
We can, you know, maybe take some of these people to a black belt level of brainstorming. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I love your theme. I mean, we've been playing together, trying to think through how this is just an amazing brand that you've been building. You know, the black belt, as you have taught so many of us, is the epitome of anyone in the martial arts field. I've had I actually spent only about a year doing Taekwondo with one of the champions who is in my community. Then I had an injury, not from Taekwondo, and that kind of put me out. But the last 4 or 5 years, I've been involved in martial arts only from watching my son, who's also in Taekwondo, and he's one belt away from his black belt.
Yeah,
and so he's not even a teenager yet, and so it's been fun to watch that. But you know, my expertise in the martial arts field is zero compared to yours. With 3 black belts and 3 different martial arts, you just, yeah, I definitely don't want to be messing with you. So anyway, I have great respect for what it would take to get 1, not just 3 in 3 different fields.
So thank you.
What I tried to do, though, is in just getting ready for our interview, is to try to think through how I take your amazing brand about being a black belt in any field and try to apply it to what little knowledge that I have about martial arts. What I want to do is to come up with some tips here, basically 7 powerful steps to black belt brainstorming. And so,
excellent. Okay.
What I think that your listeners, the value to them would be to try to think, okay, how can I be a black belt in whatever field? And since almost every one of us has a need for generating ideas at times, hopefully these 7 steps might give them something tangible to hang on to about how they can be a black belt brainstormer in whatever field that they're in.
Sure, that's all we want, you to be a black belt dentist, black belt plumber, black belt nurse, whatever that is. So,
exactly.
Great, I'm eager to hear about this idea generation system. Go ahead, John.
Well, let's talk about how we earn our black belt in brainstorming. So, what I try to do is to try to think through. In martial arts, the very first step is what I call crunch out your motives. By that I mean, in martial arts, what in my experience in just thinking through why people get involved in martial arts, I think about 5 primary motives, and you may identify multiple, and you may have other things as far as you thinking back as to why you got involved, but I think some of these have some carryover into why we might want to be black belt brainstormers too. The first one is oftentimes we just want to have protection. We want to be able to defend ourselves.
Sure.
Because none of us want to be the skinny guy on the beach who gets sand kicked in our face and not be able to defend ourselves. And so I think there's just a common human desire to want to be able to protect ourselves, right? The same thing would come with brainstorming in that we don't want to get beat up by others that have better ideas. So
exactly.
The protection motive would be a good one in that we want to be as good as we can in coming up with ideas. So the second one would be accomplishment, because oftentimes people are motivated by the desire to become a master of a skill or to earn a belt. And that's one of the great things about martial arts, is that as you move up the belt process, you can feel progress and know you're making progress, but you see it by this belt that you earn.
Absolutely.
The same thing kind of happens within brainstorming, in that the more you know and the more you apply and risk, then eventually you begin to rein ideas faster and faster, and where you're able to turn them into a dynamic force which nourishes all the people around you. And I think that sense of accomplishment is a dual purpose thing too. The third motive would be competition, because some like to be the best in whatever field they're in. I didn't really grow up in a super competitive environment. I mean, I have some sports background, but I haven't always been the just killer and got to win at every single thing.
Right.
And yet I've learned that type A people that are like that, that's one thing that they're often attracted to martial arts, I think, because they like duking it out with other people.
They like mixing it up.
And, and so, Sarn, you better have your act together when somebody's coming after you with a round kick. So anyway, I think there are people that in brainstorming that have the same thing. They thrive on inventing new tools, creating better ideas, and kicking the other guy's butt. I think that's a motive for some people, is just to win, to have a good competition.
Right.
The fourth motive in martial arts would be physical fitness, because for me and for many other people, it just offered a great way to stretch, to tone, to work out some of the frustrations of the day, and go over there and take it out on that bag, or
exactly.
Maybe take it out on the poor guy that you're sparring
maybe
with,
so.
And he's going, how come you were so mean tonight?
I have a lot to work out.
Well, I think although brainstorming doesn't do a lot for your physical fitness, it certainly does a lot for your mental fitness, because even if we see some of the research as people get older now about what it takes to stave off dementia and things like that, oftentimes we're seeing that some of it relates to how much you use your brain and puzzles and all the kinds of things that they're doing now with elderly people and even younger people to keep your brain engaged and problem solving and those kind of things. It's just great to stretch your brain in the same way that we stretch our bodies to get ready and to keep ourselves mentally active.
Yeah, makes sense.
The last one is the motive of discipline, because I think at its heart, from all the martial arts, let's say, maybe it's just Hollywood movie stuff that I'm familiar with, but I think the heart behind martial arts is to ultimately master yourself, to be able to, through discipline, learn how to, through rigorous training, control your own body, your own emotions, your own abilities, and focus those in ways that, if needed, you can defend yourself. I think just that there's this heart of discipline that says, I need to learn how to master me, not just these other potential motives. And I think, certainly, since this is what I do for a living, I have some of that myself, in that I want to become the best brainstormer, not so much from a competitive to be able to brag about that, but to be the best me that I can be.
Sure.
And the joy of learning new techniques, of writing new things. I mean, even just getting ready for this interview, it's just stretched me to be thinking how I can be a better black belt brainstormer, getting this mastery of whatever skill you're after. That's what I think is the first critical step in this becoming a black belt brainstormer, is to work on your motives. What is it that's driving you to need these ideas or want to become a better idea person?
Yeah, see, and you said, you know, humbly a while ago that you didn't have that much experience in martial arts, but from that description, I mean, you get it. So if I could just teach that to some of my judo students, that it's not just about learning the throws, it's about much more. But, and so black belts are seen, but when they get to that level, they're mentors and teachers. Now they're responsible for teaching other people, the lower ranks. And certainly as a black belt brainstormer yourself, I can see, I mean, you certainly have the heart and the gift as a teacher. And so I've seen your time in helping other people learn that technique. So you're right there.
We're both in the teaching world.
We are
helping people to become better at whatever field that they're in.
So we've got our motives identified. Where do we go from
there? You bet.
There?
Step number two is stretching our minds. So when I think about watching my son as he's getting ready each Tuesday and Thursday night at his Taekwondo class, what do they always start with? They start stretching.
Sure.
You've had a crazy day. Your body's kind of tight from whatever you've been involved with, and so just like your muscles need to be stretched before a workout, your mind is the same way. And so the second step is really to kind of do some warm-ups to try to get some techniques to get you in the mood and thinking about, okay, what is it that I can do today to generate ideas that might be a little different? For me, most of the time it comes down to just a mental awareness or a mindset that you have to put yourself in. And I use three metaphors or visual pictures to try to illustrate a warm-up exercise that you can do. The metaphors are a door, a gear, and a rubber band. When you see a picture of a door in your mind, you can see the door as being closed or being open.
Right.
To get yourself into the mood for generating new ideas, you have to mentally picture yourself taking this closed door, grabbing the handle with your hand, turning that handle and opening the door intentionally to say,
I see,
I am open to new ideas.
Great, okay.
Okay. The second picture is that of a gear, and here it's really two gears, because you can see these two gears with their interlocking teeth, and they could just be a little bit apart,
right?
But until you engage those gears, nothing's going to happen.
I see. Okay.
And so the second metaphor is to try to really intentionally say, I'm going to engage this session. And oftentimes I have to do that in the groups, because people come with all different kinds of thoughts and things on their mind.
Right.
And they're busy, and now we're asking them to generate ideas, and I have to challenge them to be a gear to engage this discussion for this 30 minutes or this 3 hours or whatever we've got.
Right.
And of course the third metaphor is somewhat overused, but obviously a rubber band, you see it in one shape and form, and yet just with a little bit of pulling, you see it go way beyond itself to stretch. Trying to just stretch our minds.
Okay, so those are just some kind of mental warm-ups to get ready for the big game. Or
the big game. Well, the big game is in point number three, and that's actually practice makes progress. And that's just a play on practice makes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Since I don't know if we can ever be the perfect brainstormer, and even the master black belt people in martial arts, they probably still have new things that they can learn because
sure.
they have that attitude. But I say practice makes progress because ultimately you have to move from this receptivity, the getting ready and knowing yourself a little bit, to it's time to do workout here. Inevitably, what happens in working out is that you mess up, you duke it out, you fall down, you get knocked down. Sometimes you get a bloody nose. I mean, man, the same thing happens in brainstorming. It can get ugly in there.
So they're not all going to be million-dollar ideas?
No, they're not.
Oh, this sounds like work, John.
It is work. That's the challenge. Certainly, I know that that's the motivational challenge within any mastery of whether it's a sport
sure.
or work or even brainstorming here, is that the practice, the daily, the weekly practice, the sessions that you get into, and sometimes you mess up. And I mean, I could probably tell you some funny stories about just stupid things that I've done, mistakes that I've made, and yet each one of those, you have the choice to learn from that or to be held back by that. You know, you and I have known each other for a little while, and we both have watched each other somewhat grow up in the business, and we've hurt when we've seen each other mess up and go, oh man, John, you did a horrible job on that. You know, God, I feel for you. But the key is you get back up.
You get back up.
Dust it off and try again. If you're working with a team of pretty progressive people that are also wanting to do the same thing, they don't hold it over you. They encourage you and say, that was really bad, but you can be better.
Because they know next week it's going to be their turn.
It is. Yeah, exactly. I think this step really is the tactical side of becoming an expert. You know, in martial arts you have, at least in Taekwondo, they call them katas. I know a lot of people
right.
call them forms. But those forms, by themselves, I mean, if you were in a fight trying to defend yourself, you're not going to go through one of your monstrous forms. But those forms are ways of getting yourself and your body ready to respond to a particular attack or a particular move. Well, the same thing happens within brainstorming, is that you're getting your mind ready to be able to approach things in a way that we can solve this, I can overcome this issue, we can generate more ideas, because of the confidence that you have from the hours and hours of practice that you've had in these forms. You know, sometimes in martial arts, I know some of them are more offensive or defensive, and you know, in the forms, oftentimes you're learning how to prepare or train your body to defensively react to certain movements or
right.
attacks from an opponent. But sometimes in the more aggressive arts, you're learning to offensively take or create opportunity to score points or to take out your opponent. And so you need both of those also within the brainstorming.
Okay. So that's where the constant practice comes in. And like I said, they're not all going to be great ideas. Some of them may be goofy, but you won't ever find that great idea if you say, oh, this is too hard.
Exactly.
I thought I had a good idea last week, but it was bad, so I'm not going to do it anymore. It's like the martial artist who says, I got kicked in the head, I'm not going back to practice.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, I was helping somebody a little while back. One example, we came up with some wild ideas for some new programs that they came up with, and we were working on some domain name ideas, and so
okay.
I suggested a domain name that it turns out was very similar to one owned by one of their competitors. And so after I gave them this idea and they filed for it, next thing you know, they're getting a cease and desist letter from their competitor. And I kind of had to back up and say, ooh, bad idea. I mean, sometimes you say, I mean, and so they stopped using it. And so it wasn't a big issue, but even sometimes, you know, your best ideas this week turn out to be not so hot ideas a couple weeks from later.
Well, it sounded like it was a good idea, just the other company had already
read it
or something very close. So.
Exactly.
So, all right, so where do we go from there?
Well, step number four is to train your tools. When I think about tools in the martial arts, we think about primarily your hands, your feet, your elbows, your knees, and your
right.
head. And now you're so amazing, you can probably kind of like the old this finger is registered with the FBI.
Well, no, not quite.
I can kill you with my ear. Now, I don't know how you would do that, but you probably could. So, But I mean, those five things, hands, feet, elbows, knees, and head, are your main tools in martial arts. Well, in brainstorming, I would say your main physical tools are your eyes, your ears, your nose, your fingers, and your tongue, i.e. representing the five senses that we have.
Okay.
Now, most of us are visual learners, and so the primary tool for most of us is our eyes. And yet, it's been great because I've learned a lot from one of our colleagues and one of my heroes, Jim Stovall, who actually has built an amazing career and life without the benefit of the visual tool. He's been blind since he was 17, and so he has challenged me more than anyone in this area to figure out how he lives his amazing life without eyesight. I'm just amazed at what he's able to accomplish and do, and yet he can still generate ideas through receiving input from his other senses.
Right.
Now, one of our other colleagues, Jack Fryer, talks a lot about the reticular activating system in which our minds can only focus on a certain number of things. So we see lots of visual input, we have lots of sensory input, and yet we really end up only focusing on what's critical. And so the short and succinct way to say that would be you find what you look for.
Okay.
And so if you're looking for million-dollar ideas, you'll find them because that's where your focus is. That's what you're telling your RAS is important. When you're in the mode to try to train your tools, to train your senses, to be looking for opportunities. And that's one metaphor, but you can listen for opportunities, you can feel for opportunities, you can taste, and you can hear. No, smell opportunity. Thank you. I can't even remember the five senses. I'm so confused. Anyway.
Well, that's a great point. So it's like the person who thinks, you know, I'm thinking about buying a new Lexus.
Mm-hmm.
So they start seeing Lexus cars everywhere they go. Reticular activating system. So you're saying the same thing. If I'm really focused on or tell myself, I want some new ideas for a product line or to redo our manufacturing process, then those ideas will start to generate.
Exactly. There are lots of tips and techniques that you can use to try to tell your mind, I want to solve this problem, or I want to be looking for solutions by focusing on this one thing. So you have to train your mind and then use some of these tools. I'll give you a couple quick examples of how to do that. One would be to use your network. For instance, if you're facing a particular issue, let's say that you've got 10 good friends or 10 colleagues of an issue. Oftentimes people would call this a mastermind group. It doesn't have to be a mastermind group, but since we both participate in different types of masterminds, then we know the value of being able to come to a group of people and use your network to be able to say, I'm trying to solve this or I'm working on this, what are your thoughts? You can do that via email, phone, card, whatever, but that's one technique. Another technique is the pre-sleep process, and this has been documented by a lot of different people who say that right before they go to sleep, they pose their mind as the question of what they're struggling with.
Oh, okay.
And so in their subconscious all night long, while they're getting some good rest, the subconscious is going, it's work time! And so the subconscious mind begins to chew on that, and sometimes you wake up with a solution in the middle of the night. Sometimes you wake up in the morning. Sometimes it takes a little while. And this is certainly not a catch-all, fix-all. It doesn't happen every night for me. But, I mean, even today, I'm doing another interview today in a different area. And this morning when I woke up, I didn't have very many ideas last night. But before I went to bed, I'm going, I'd better come up with something before the morning. And when I got up this morning, I had two or three things that just kicked. One last little tip on that is, you need to always keep pen and paper by your nightstand. I actually have a light pen that I use so that I don't have to wake up my wonderful wife. So that she goes, what are you turning the light on for? I'll just reach over in the drawer, grab the light pen and a piece of paper, and write that idea down. One of my favorite creative people in the world is Sam Horn, and who's written a book that I'll probably talk about in a little bit called Pop. But she says, if you think it, you ink it. Because if you don't, you'll lose it.
You'll lose it. Yeah, and I've been guilty of that, thinking, oh, that's a pretty good idea. I'll write that down later, or I'll work on that tomorrow. And then I go back to it, now what was that? And it's gone.
It's gone, and who knows if it'll ever come back, especially if it was a great idea.
I know.
Oh! Well, there are some other tools, though, that we can use ourselves, or we can train ourselves to use within the brainstorming and martial arts. Obviously, in martial arts, you've got knives, throwing stars, nunchucks, swords, you name it.
Sure.
And yet, in brainstorming, the equivalent would be, an example, this pen and paper, a digital recorder, a camera. I've taken somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30,000 pictures in the last several years.
Wow.
I take a camera with me everywhere, and now it's even better. My new cell phone has a camera in it, so if I don't have my good digital, I can snap that. Just as a reminder,
right.
I took a couple yesterday. I went to call on a client, or a potential client, and they had this amazing display in their foyer, sparked a bunch of ideas, so I just took a picture, and now when I download it, I'll remember that's a way to capture
sure.
those.
Okay.
So, plus there's card decks, games, props, worksheets, books, and all different kinds of websites. I mean, the internet is a brainstormer's dream because you can get ideas sparking just by entering about any term. So that's kind of what I've been working on with the cyberstorming.com website, is to create just a massively amazing tool, primarily for corporations to be able to use to generate
right.
ideas. So,
give us an example, John, how that worked. And I visited that site, and it's fascinating to see, you know, like, well, I never would have thought of it that way. But tell us a little bit more about that site.
Well, right now I'm about 10% done with all of what I want to see happen with the site
okay.
someday, but probably one of the coolest tools is a tool called Spinstorming, in which I have 16 different tools right now that ultimately throw random ideas, metaphors, pictures, images at you to try to get you to focus on whatever your topic is from a different light. An example would be one of those tools is called role-storming. This is one of the best techniques in any brainstorming event that you do. What you do is you just imagine yourself in a role of another person.
Oh.
Perhaps it is the role of, let's say, an attorney or a receptionist or a banker, or so you think of a generic role. Another way to do that is to think about a specific person that you admire, or maybe somebody that you don't like. You think, okay, what would I do if this situation would work? I call it the WWXD technique, based on WWJD, which most people know, what would Jesus do,
right.
is the question. For a Christian, that means that they try to anticipate what would Jesus do in this particular situation.
Sure.
And yet in a brainstorming role, you can put X in there, anybody that you want, that you admire, that you think about, and say, how would Tiger Woods handle this situation? How would Oprah? How would whoever? And if, in each particular situation, you just try to think through, how might they approach it differently? How would Einstein do this? How would the president or whatever? And oftentimes that sparks new ideas.
So you get out of your own biases that are inherent and force yourself to think of, you know, whether it's how would the president look at this? How would the homeless guy living under a bridge address this? Probably some different priorities.
Exactly.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Well, that's pretty much in training the tools. That's step number four. So we're cruising on, three to go, and so let's jump into number five.
All right.
I call this one Mimic the Master.
Ah,
okay. And so I'll throw a question back at you, but when you think about the greatest martial artist of all time, who would you say?
We're the greatest,
greatest of all time.
You know, a lot of us are familiar just because of TV and movies, people like Bruce Lee or Chuck Norris.
Oh, yeah.
And they are very accomplished. You know, and I have roots in judo, so I think immediately of Dr. Kano, who created judo from jiu-jitsu as a sport. Also Aikido. Ushiba was the founder of that, and I've seen video of him, old footage,
mm-hmm.
which is just amazing, and he was supposed to be just magical.
Mm-hmm.
So those are names that come to mind as far as the masters.
You bet. So when you think about those people, I mean, I can just see you now. You're running through these images of the videos that you've seen of these guys,
exactly.
but you just go, wow, how did they do that? I mean, these are some of the inventors of the sport.
Right.
And so when I say mimic the masters as far as how you become a black belt brainstormer, we have to do the same thing.
Okay.
Because I try to divvy them up sort of in two categories. The masters of old, ultimately, unfortunately, that means that these people have passed on. They're not with us anymore,
right.
except in spirit and in memory. But then I have the Living Masters. And so I'm just going to throw out a couple of names and tell a quick stories about how I mimic the Masters.
Great.
Within the idea field, obviously since the beginning of mankind, we've been a race of ideas in the sense that that's what we do as human beings. One of the earliest idea person was a man named Heraclitus, and actually one of the modern Living Masters, a guy named Roger von Ott, had written a couple of books using Heraclitus as an example of one of the greatest thinkers or creativity people from the old days. When we think about more modern times, I think about Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, the man, I don't know how in the world he did.
Well, master is so many
he's unbelievable. Fields,
yeah.
The ultimate Renaissance man. I mean, he's incredible. Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Edison. I mean, these guys are absolutely incredible in what they accomplished. I mentioned Alex Osborne as a founder of the term brainstorming.
Right.
But he certainly brought our field into a more modern, there are techniques that can really work and help. And then I just can't help but mention really probably my favorite person. When people ask who's your absolute favorite creativity or innovation genius, I have to go to George Washington Carver.
Oh, yeah.
George Washington Carver, he's
great.
The master.
Sure.
In fact, I've got a couple of quotes that I brought just to share with you. I actually went to George Washington Carver National Monument in Diamond, Missouri here a couple of years ago. And it was like a religious experience. I'm crying as I walk around. This guy was absolutely amazing. But for those of you that don't know about his story, just one of his small stories is that Southern agriculture was struggling dramatically, and they needed ways to create other types of crops. And eventually it came down to that the peanut had potential for being able to restore and save the entire Southern United States agriculture. This man, who just has an amazing story, growing up his parents were slaves, he decides he wants to become a scientist. He figures out that the peanut can restore the soil, but then putting nutrients back into the soil in Southern agriculture. But he eventually developed over 300 uses for the peanut. And his story is, as far as how he discovered these are his words. He asked his great creator, "Dear Mr. Creator, please tell me what the universe was made for." And the great creator answered, "You want to know too much for that little mind of yours. Ask for something more your size." "Then I asked, Dear Mr. Creator, tell me what man was made for." Again, the great creator replied, "Little man, you are still asking too much. Cut down the extent of your request and improve the intent." So then I ask, "Please, Mr. Creator, will you tell me why the peanut was made?" This man was so humble and so amazing. I mean, pretty much he locks himself up in his laboratory, and he comes up with not one, not two, but 300 uses for the peanut.
Now that's going deep within.
You're talking about a niche market. Peanut niche right there. Anyway, another thing is he just had his faith certainly drove a lot of his sense of discovery. But one other quote that I love is he says, "I love to think of nature as an unlimited broadcasting system through which God speaks to us every hour if we will only tune in."
Mm.
Ah,
that's great.
That is one of the classic, because even if you're not of a religious persuasion, it's just a reminder that your eyes have the capability, your senses have the capability to receive this broadcast system of input that can, you know, challenge you to solve old problems, to generate new solutions. It's just, I love this man. He is just, he's a rock star in the world of the old masters. I have to mention some of the living masters because a couple of these people are just absolutely, in fact, all of them are amazing, but I'd start with my friend Gerald Heyman, who actually has an amazing business in Chicago right now. It's called the Thinkubator. It's just a cool place. Gerald is one of the most giving people. He's invented all different kinds of tools. He has one little pocket tool that he calls the No-Brainer. K-N-O-W, Brainer.
Sure.
And it's just a cool card deck that he's used to help people come up with innovative ideas. Jeff Tobe, one of my colleagues, he wrote a book called Coloring Outside the Lines, and he is just an amazing brain. He calls the brain sparking. Mm. But, you know, this guy, he's a rock star as well. DeWitt Jones, who some of you probably have heard of, National Geographic photographer, he has a video that he wrote or that he put together based on the photos that he's taken in National Geographic.
Oh.
Called Everyday Creativity. And it will move you to tears just because of the shots that he's taken. But he tells you how to be able to take these kind of pictures or to create this kind of life or business by using some of the same techniques he used to create amazing photographs. Roger Bonnock, I mentioned, but he's written a couple of great books called A Whack on the Side of the Head and A Kick in the Seat of the Pants. Great titles.
They are great.
Has a card deck called The Creative Whack Pack. I just love what he does. And then Doug Hall, who's up in Ohio, I believe, he just has so many amazing things. His place is called Eureka Ranch, which is somewhere where everybody needs to go. Eureka, obviously, I found it. It's what the translation means. He's a great idea person. Then there's other pioneers like Joyce Wyckoff and Tony Buzan, who are involved in mind mapping. Michael McAlco, who came up with a deck called the Think Pack. One of my colleagues, actually, who I've never met, who lives in the same town that I do, Dr. Arthur Van Gundy. He's written about 10 or 15 amazing problem-solving books. Ed Bernanke, he wrote a book called Wow, That's a Great Idea. And then can't get away without mentioning Edward De Bono, the De Bono thinking techniques. These guys are just masters. So I'm throwing some names out here, not name dropping, but I'm telling you these are people that you need to check out if you're serious about becoming a black belt brainstormer. There are four other companies that kind of do what I do that I just love the kind of things that they do. IDEO out in California, they're probably the world's top new product production company. I mean, I came out of a new product background, so I do some of this too, but they are amazing, some of the things that they've done as a team. Idea Champions are some guys up in New York that they created a card deck called Free the Genie, which is just a cool, like an idea genie. Synectics up in Massachusetts, they have kind of one of the early pioneers and still doing some great work. And then Innova in Iowa. These are four other companies that do some fantastic things in the innovation field. And you may wonder, why in the world am I giving you the names of my competitors? Because the reality of it is I don't really look at them as competitors, but as my heroes and colleagues, because I hope that they're able to learn from some of the things that I can bring to the overall brainstorming equation, just as I have learned at their feet, too. There's no reason for me to be threatened by them. I'm a big pie kind of person in the sense that there's a lot of business for all of us. In fact, I'm looking for ways to collaborate and get the gospel of great ideas out to more people. Ultimately, it's about pushing each other to become better at what we do, whether it's in martial arts or whether it's in creativity and brainstorming. Mimic the masters.
Mimic
step number
masters.
Five. Okay. Sorry, I got a little passionate
no,
about
that's
some of those things.
Clearly, but that's great.
George Washington Carver, he gets my juices going. The guy, he's amazing.
Check out their books, their websites, and that's how you can learn from those folks or read the biographies of maybe those folks that are not with us anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Well, in fact, right at the end, I'm going to give you a email address. If anybody's interested, I put together what I call the top 25 innovation resources. These are just some of the people and resources that I use, and I share those, and a lot of these people are on this list along with their books and stuff. Let's end with the masters. Thank you, masters, for your contribution. So move to number six.
Yes.
You know, number six, sometimes when you're working on ideas, you just can't quite get the right title. And so this one has a really kind of freaky title, but it's Spar, Fight, and Take the Test.
Ah,
okay. So you love this kind of stuff.
Sure.
Although I've never really seen you out there duking it out with anybody hardcore, I have seen you throw a few people in your audience.
Sure.
Be warned, he might throw you. Actually, I've seen people in his audience throw him. Because he's a master of teaching them how to use a couple of moves, and Kyle usually ends up on the floor at some point in his presentation. Anyway, this number six is you got to move beyond practice and working out and studying to actually getting out there and sparring
and fighting and taking the test. And well, those are really three different ways. Obviously, sparring, you're just kind of doing your best to get each other ready, and you're not really trying to take each other out.
Right.
Obviously, if you're in a criminal situation where somebody's trying to take you out on the street, then you have to, you want to be able to move out and, you know, move it with as little injury as possible to you.
Sure.
And hopefully walk away from it without having to engage. But at the time you do have to engage, you don't want to be the person laying on the ground.
Exactly.
Put it that way. The third element of that, though, is to take the test, because for most people involved in martial arts, as they're working their way up towards whatever goal they have, ultimately, let's say a black belt, you do get regular testing. And so
right.
You have to prepare your mind and body to just actually get out there and do it, to jump out there. And sometimes you fail. I mean, I've watched some of the kids in my son's class. Sometimes they don't let them test because they know they're not ready.
Okay. Exactly.
And that's a good master. But every now and then, there are times that they don't pass their test. And that's a great lesson, too, because they either learned that they just really didn't practice enough, or maybe they were off that night and they learned how to overcome the fact that they didn't get their belt this time. But there will be another time. And so the master comes up, and it's always kind of fun. My son's teacher, Master Ed Rue, he is incredible with the kids. And so if he has a discipline issue, he'll walk down and in a soft voice, he'll explain to them what it is that they need to do to improve that skill next time. And so it's not a humiliating thing. It's a very personal and private, this is how you do to get better. And sometimes you'll just see him whispering and he'll show them what to do. And then he may give them another chance, or they may fail that test,
right,
and have the chance to start over again. So most of the time, you know, we have to just really get in the game, as another good metaphor. So how do we get this sense of accomplishment by moving on? We get to get out there and duke it out. So
let's start practicing, generating some of those, using some of those ideas, and see what the results are.
Yeah, I mean, we learn by oftentimes the resistance that we face. And so in sparring, you've got somebody who's looking for your weak spots and helps you get better. They're not going to kill you. I mean, you've got pads, and yet they're working on you, trying to make sure you're ready for when the not-so-nice person comes after you. The same kind of thing happens in brainstorming, in that, you know, in my early days, I'm grateful for clients that were very grace-oriented in my early days, because I'm sure that there were some times, I mean, I know I didn't have the skills at the beginning, but I had a few people that took some risks and said, John, we know you have a lot to offer. Come and give us your best shot. And I gave it my best shot. Unfortunately, sometimes it wasn't as good as it needed to be, and there was grace involved almost all the time, and they said, give us a chance again. Come back. Let's try it again. And when I came back, by golly, I was better. I was ready. And then they throw some new curves at me. And so I get knocked down again. And that's just part of the process.
That's how you progress over the years. So, yeah, great lesson.
How you become a black belt. So let's wrap this up with at least number 7. And it's a maybe overused phrase, but I couldn't think of anything better. It's just lifelong learning.
Okay.
Because innovators need lots of stimulation. We need to be getting ideas and input from all different kinds of sources. And you don't just become a black belt and just kick back. I mean, you have to maintain your skills, and you have to be able to continue to practice. So for me, what this means is that I just have a variety of ideas and tips about how I stay in tune and stay on the top of my game. Let me share just a couple of those, and then other people can apply that to how they want to be a black belt, whatever. But in this case, a black belt brainstormer. Certainly, I'm a book lover, and it really disturbs me when I see the stats about the number of people. In fact, I saw one just yesterday that said 1 out of 4 people in America did not even read a book at all last year. 25% of the country, who knows, surveys, you never know where they get their info, but I mean, that's a lot of people to not read one
book.
Oh my gosh, I love books.
Right.
Now, audio books and MP3 books and those kind of things are great for our generation, because I mean, I'm a busy person, so I'm starting to try to do more listening while I'm driving or in the car or whatever. So, but anyway, a couple of my favorite authors within who sparked me the most in the last couple of years.
would be Seth Godin, who's just an incredible marketing dude out in New York. He wrote two books that I just absolutely love, Purple Cow, which is just a great... He just did so many masterful things in that. I'm in awe and how he packaged it, how he wrote it, how he took a simple little story from his family's vacation and turned it into a phenomena. He's amazing. Anyway, he wrote another book called Free Prize Inside, and for those people that are looking for great marketing ideas, one of the best books I've ever read as far as giving ideas about how to try to find. And a quick aside on that is he actually packaged the book inside a box, and so the book was the free prize inside.
Yeah.
So you buy this box, it's like a cereal box. He's just a genius. Anyway, love that guy. Malcolm Gladwell has written two awesome books as well. He's from New York, and The Tipping Point was really the first one that was kind of his breakout book. And every day I'm picking up something relating to marketing or just some of the ideas that he talked about, different kinds of people that make ideas actually happen. And then a newer book of his called Boink, which, like the Freakonomics book, those guys were great too, but Blink just makes you go, "Gah!" And you just start thinking, and you go, "How could that be true?" And then it just gets your mind working in different areas. Then the classic is Selling the Invisible, and I think Beckwith and Rise are the author. I think those are the two authors, but that book, for anybody in the idea and marketing business, Selling the Invisible is a classic, been around for ages, but it is amazing. That's books. Obviously, audios, websites, these are all different ways to generate ideas, but one of the things that I do a lot is what I call magstorming, where I take, actually, Kyle, I get about 40 or 50 different magazines, and so my inbox every week is just full at the post office. When I go to pick up the mail, I have 5 or 6 new magazines. This last week when I went to go do a job for a client, I just picked up a stack of what I'd gotten that week, and it was about 10 different magazines. And honestly, most of the time I just look at the covers, and those covers just spark ideas because it tells me what's the buzz going on out there in that particular industry.
Right.
Now, I have absolute favorites for anybody in the idea business. If you're not getting these or reading these magazines, Fast Company, mm-hmm. The Futurist, and Wired Magazine. For me, it's just like, it's bread and butter. They all have different perspectives, but they're always talking cutting edge, always pushing me to think new things.
Great. Okay.
I think inevitably, as human beings, we're wired up to be connected to people. The beauty of associations, meaning being involved in some kind of an association, is another great way to be a lifelong learner. You know that I'm involved in two organizations in particular, ASTD, which is the American Society for Training and Development, which in my field is critical. They just have some fantastic content, and I'm involved in my local chapter, and yet that's an example of people that I'm constantly able to spark with and to come up with ideas. You know, though, that my absolute favorite is the organization that we're both involved in, which is the National Speakers Association, NSA. And NSA, I would just have to say, in the time that I have been involved in building this new business, they have been the most amazing group of people that I've ever been associated with. So when I think about, I mean, our local NSA Oklahoma chapter is, we're bringing in world-class people that month by month I'm getting to talk to people that are pioneers in the field, and that they're focused on the similar ideas that we all face as speakers, authors, consultants, trainers, facilitators, which I learned that if you're a speaker, you're all of those things.
At some point,
coaches the whole nine yards.
Right.
So I just had, last night I just made a list of some of my favorite people that have added to my life in the last several years, people like Nito Quibain and Dan Burris, who's a futurist, Diana Boer, who... She just has done a couple of fantastic things. In fact, I saw her earlier this week, and she's just a giving, smart, on top of it kind of person. Probably just saved me a ton of money by giving me some great ideas this week. Mark Sanborn, Tom Wininger, Alan Weiss. I mean, he's wrote a book called Million Dollar Consulting. He's been to our chapter twice. He's an interesting person.
He is.
He's an introvert. He's kind of quacky, quirky. But his content is incredible. I mentioned Sam Horn earlier. She's written several books. Her newest is one of my new favorite for people in the idea business. It's called POP, P-O-P. She came to our chapter, did 3 days in Oklahoma. I got to spend a lot of time with her. She just, that POP book for somebody looking for ideas, that's a great one to check out.
That is a great resource.
Susan Friedman, who has a new book out called Riches and Niches, for people that are trying to come up with ways to capitalize on their niche. And then Rick Jekyll, Tom Antion, and Fred Gleick. Those last two guys are super gurus in the internet world, and I have learned an amazing amount of information from them. Besides that, I've hired a few coaches within our industry, Mark LeBlanc, Cherie Alexander, Kerry Robertson, Lou Heckler, Doug Stevenson. Each one of these people have added to my life or my business and helping me either be a better speaker or a better business person. And so be assured I wouldn't be laying out cash if I didn't think that they had some expertise to share. So no matter how good you are at your game, you can still reinvest in yourself to be even better.
Sure. And so the best performers always have a coach.
Exactly.
Right? So no matter what level you're performing at. So great, those are some of your
coaches. And coaches aren't free. I mean,
sure.
They should earn their keep.
They pay for their expertise as well.
I think you know as well as I do that probably the people I owe the greatest debt to are my own mastermind group, which is our entire NSA Oklahoma chapter. Just an amazing group of people. And I'm not even going to try to list because I'd have to leave somebody off and that wouldn't be fair. But these are people that are helping me every week in some way, and hopefully I'm able to pay back sometimes too, but 1,000 ways. And so, and then if I had to wrap up my list of who I get my lifelong learning from, it's my own parents, my family, my wife, my kids. I've got a 3-year-old, and I'm learning something from him every day.
I bet.
If he gets involved in martial arts, you are dead meat.
No.
He's a crazy man.
He's focused.
Enthusiastic,
so I bet.
Just their constant support, and we all need that kind of support network and even the freedom to fail, because you don't just start a business in 5 minutes.
Sure.
It's taken years for me to be able to get mine to move on a good track, and I know that every one of us have ways that... Here's basically 7 steps. And this last one, lifelong learning, you can tell I'm pretty passionate about that too.
Absolutely. And the lesson I hear, John, there is well taken. Again, you said it, but we don't just do this by ourselves. Whether you're working in a corporation and maybe you're managing other people, or you have your own business, but there are coaches, mentors, certainly family support. Hope you have that. It's a much tougher struggle if you don't. But learn from those people. If you don't have what we call the mastermind group, really look into that. Great benefit. Hopefully people in similar situations, maybe not in your industry if you see them as competitors, but people in a similar situation or role that you are in different industries and bounce ideas off each other. Great.
You challenged me to try to find out exactly who gave this quote, and I think I've tried my best to give credit to some of the people that have helped me in becoming the brainstormer that I am. But I need to find out credit for who said this phrase, but it's one of my favorite phrases. It's well used, well known, but it's basically that we stand on the shoulders of giants.
Sure.
And so, I mean, it's hard not to get choked up when I think sometimes about the people that have helped me get where I am, and I am so far away from where I want to be and what I can be. And yet, man, every one of these people, and you need to surround yourself with just a group that you can stand on their shoulders. I mean, even the freedoms that we have today. This week I was in a session with a client, and there was a guy in our group that had been in the Marines for 27 years. I mean, I would not have the freedom that I have today if he hadn't put 27 years. And this guy was trying to, he's 60-something years old, he's trying to get back in. He misses it so much. And I'm just going, I mean, I have my freedoms, I'm standing on his shoulders because he's paid the price for me to be able to have many of the things that I have. So,
absolutely. Well, John, we're going to wrap up here in just a minute, but I want to make sure we can send people to your website. Again, you've given some great information here, and have some more resources, but the Brainstorm, not the Brainstorm, but brainstormnetwork.com. This is John Storm. If you would, John, we went through, you know, the 7 steps. Go over those one more time for us and summarize that, if you would.
Okay, real quick, the 7 powerful steps to black belt brainstorming. Man, that alliteration, those 3 B's.
Gotta love
really
that.
The first is to crunch out your motives, and then the second is to stretch your mind. The third, practice makes progress. The fourth, train your tools. The fifth, mimic the masters. 6, which still needs some work, spar, fight, take the test, and 7, be a lifelong learner. These are the 7 tips, at least for today, that
you're
I'll
right.
share with you.
What you mentioned some resources that people could get from your website. Give us the details on that.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take this interview right here, and I'm going to actually turn it into a real article, something that you can walk away with.
Okay.
So if you didn't get to write these down, if you're in the car and you're listening to this later, so all you have to do is to send me an email, and the email address is blackbelt@brainstormnetwork.com. That's blackbelt@brainstormnetwork.com. And I'll send you the free Black Belt article. If you'll put that in the subject line, that'll just make sure that I get you the right stuff. Plus, I'll give you at least one other free tool, probably the top 25 innovation resources sheet, and who knows what else I might come up with by then.
Outstanding. John Storm, great innovator, great idea generator, and fantastic teacher. Go to brainstormnetwork.com if you'd like to get a copy of the article and some other resources. Send an email to blackbelt@brainstormnetwork.com. John, it's been a great pleasure. Thanks for joining me.
Kyle, thank you. And as I always say when I talk to you, the greatest phrase is, Kia! Hey, thank you for being such a great example for us, too, because you are the master, and I'm at your feet as far as a great admirer for your work.
Thank you. It's kind to say. Take care.
This is Kyle Easton with Black Belt Performance. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck in getting to the black belt level in your own arena, whether it's personal or business. If you'd like more information about the expert on this recording, you can contact them at the website provided during the interview, or get in touch with me. Send me an email to info@blackbeltspeaker.com.